Opportunity to meet the U.S. District Judge James Brady of the Middle District of Louisiana, who issued the order saying you should be immediately released and barred from being retried for the killing of the Angola prison guard, Brent Miller, whose former wife even said she did not believe that you had done this. Judge Brady later said, quote, I did what a judge is supposed to do. We only have a minute. But what was it like to meet him? And the power of judges in some of these cases as prisoners, former Black Panthers, are still seeking release.
Well, you know, at the time I was speaking at Southern University Law School in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and it was a total surprise to know that Judge Brady was in the audience. And so after speaking with the law students and attorneys and other people involved in the judicial system, I learned that Judge Brady was there, and I want to thank him for having the courage to apply the law and not allow my being a former Black Panther Party or my activism in prison to cloud the issues and to apply the law. And that's exactly what he done. You know, of course, we know that the state of Louisiana, mostly through the Attorney General office, continuously appeal his rulings, and in most cases, his rulings were reversed or stayed, and this process was drug out over a 44-year period.
We have to leave it there, but it's been a fascinating discussion. I want to thank Albert Woodfox and Robert King, now in Austin, Asekwu Odinga joining us here in New York, and Eddie Conway in Baltimore. Go to democracynow.org for our special report on the Black Panthers who are still behind bars to find out more about their cases. Also, I'll be speaking at Arizona State University in Tempe Thursday, 7 p.m., Saturday morning here in New York at the New York Plus Club's 2016 Journalism Conference at the NYU Kimmel Center. Check our website for more. Democracy Now! Currently accepting applications for internships. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Thirsty City on Wednesday, October 26th, starting at 8:30 p.m. at The Know in Portland. Thirsty City is a monthly hip-hop beat hangout, bringing you fresh sounds from local and touring hits. Live music until 11 p.m., DJ sets 11 p.m. to close. This month features 2 North, Durazo, Lisa Vasquez, and more, and is a benefit for KBOO. Again, that's Thirsty City, Wednesday, October 26th, 8:30 p.m. at The Know, 2026 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This Saturday, October 29th, KBOO is happy to co-sponsor the Enchanted Forest Halloween event with the Mother Earth School. The event will take place from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Jean's Farm, 3707 Southeast Johnson Creek Boulevard. It's recommended for kids ages 2 to 8. You must sign up in advance. More information can be found on the website MotherEarthSchool.org or on the right-hand side of the KBOO website, kboo.fm, under Community Events.
Good evening. Coming up next, we have KBOO Evening News. This program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the League of Women Voters of Portland. For a preview of your candidates and the ballot measures on your personal ballot, you can enter your address at vote411.org. This program has also been made possible by Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Androids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, there is a new protest camp at Standing Rock, North Dakota, where water protectors are claiming eminent domain over the corporation that recently bought the land.
The Hispanic Voice for Community Change, also known as La Voz Hispana Cambio Comunitario, is working with Don't Shoot Portland on political education and getting out the vote this week.
And supporters of single-payer health care are rallying locally and speaking out nationally on what's wrong with the Affordable Care Act.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, October 26, 2016. I'm Aaron J. Bernard.
And I'm Sam Bowman. Portland City Commissioner Dan Saltzman has removed Homer Williams' proposed Terminal 1 Harbor of Hope homeless shelter from the city's list of new winter shelters. For months, the shelter's application had been a source of disagreements among the Portland City Council and the city's social service agencies. The application was rejected in large part for its failure to find an experienced shelter operator for the facility that was planned to shelter up to 400 houseless people. Ibrahim Mubarak, co-founder of Right to Dream 2, was proposed to manage the new shelter but was deemed to lack sufficient experience. The Portland Housing Bureau is continuing to explore options for winter shelters for the houseless. With the idea of a shelter at Terminal 1 now dead, the city is preparing to sell the land.
Arias Johnson, the top civil rights lawyer for the Oregon Department of Justice, filed suit against the agency today at the U.S. District Court in Eugene. The suit accuses Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum, her deputy, and other key officials of racially profiling him when an investigator tracked his social media messages. Yesterday, Rosenblum fired one of the two Department of Justice investigators who had tracked Johnson's Twitter messages while using a new surveillance tool to search for the Black Lives Matter hashtag. The other investigator had earlier quit the agency, and the former chief counsel of the department's criminal justice division, Darren Tweet, was demoted yesterday. Rosenblum has not released the names of either of the investigators. Johnson filed a tort claim in Oregon Bureau of Labor and Industries complaint in April because of the invasion of his privacy. And Ken Gay Harmon Johnson, president of the Urban League of Portland and Arias Johnson's wife, filed a federal civil rights lawsuit in July connected with his investigation and her own treatment by her former employer, Governor John Kitzhaber's office.
Joe Arpaio, the longtime sheriff of Maricopa County, Arizona, which includes the greater Phoenix area, has been charged with criminal contempt of court. The charges result from Arpaio's refusal to honor a 2011 court order to discontinue immigration patrols and racial profiling. The 84-year-old sheriff is currently running for a seventh term as Maricopa County Sheriff. Arpaio calls himself America's toughest sheriff, but he has been accused of numerous cases of misconduct, including abuse of power, misuse of funds, unlawful enforcement of immigration laws, and election law violations. The misdemeanor charge could bring a 6-month jail term if Arpaio is found guilty, but it would not prevent him from continuing to serve as sheriff if he is reelected.
The U.S. Department of Justice has assigned a new team of agents and lawyers to investigate the death of Eric Garner in 2014. Garner died in a fatal encounter with New York City police when he was placed in a chokehold by Officer Daniel Pantaleo. The investigation has dragged on for 2 years and finally ground to a halt when the agencies involved were unable to agree on whether to bring charges against Pantaleo. Federal prosecutors and locally based FBI agents did not believe there was a sufficient evidence to bring charges, while prosecutors within the DOJ's Civil Rights Division believed there was enough for an indictment. FBI agents from outside New York have been brought in to jumpstart the investigation, and Washington-based civil rights prosecutors will present the evidence to a grand jury. The chokehold is prohibited by the New York City Police Department. Garner's last words were, quote, "I can't breathe," which has become a rallying cry for protesters nationwide. At the time of his death, Garner was being arrested for the sale of untaxed cigarettes. Officer Pantaleo was stripped of his badge and gun immediately after the event and has been on desk duty pending the outcome of the investigation.
Activist Francisco Lopez is a well-known Latino activist in Oregon. He has served as the director of CAUSA, Oregon's Latino Immigrant Rights Coalition, and more recently been involved with Voz Hispana Cambio Comunitario, the Hispanic Voice for Community Change. In addition, Francisco is supporting the launch of Millennio.org, a get-out-the-vote drive targeting Latino millennials. KBOO's Ray Bodwell spoke to Francisco about two events he was involved in early this week.
I understand you have two events coming up. Please tell us about them.
Yes, on Thursday, October 27 at 7 p.m. at St. Francis of Assisi Catholic Church in Portland, we'll be having a panel conversation about the intersections of the intersectionality of the immigrant rights movement and the Black Lives Matter movement. And the panel will include different women leaders, including Teresa Rayford, that is the lead organizer for Don't Shoot Portland, Alejandra Lilly, which is the executive director of Voz Hispana Cambio Comunitario. We have students from PSU, Black and Latinas, and a business owner of Café Revolución, and other leaders that we'll be talking about. One is about the prospects of an immigration reform next year, and also talk about the common issues that both movements are working, immigrant rights and you know, issues of racial justice, and issues of mass incarceration, mass deportation, police brutality, and many other issues that Latinos and African Americans have in common.
Francisco, what else can you tell me about Thursday night's discussion?
So what basically we'll do is what should we expect after the elections in terms of immigration reform and racial justice, not just in Oregon, but in the United States. The panel is composed by all women organizers, leaders in their own field, and we will talk about this perspective, and also what is the role of the non-Latinos and non-African-Americans in this struggle for racial justice.
All the polls would indicate that Hillary Clinton will be the next president, and I think she's been fairly vocal in support of immigrant rights and a revised immigration policy. What do you think are realistic prospects going forward for a comprehensive immigration reform?
You know, I think that all our organizations, we need to advocate for legalization. That's a given. But, remember that we had this similar conversation when Obama launched his candidacy for president 8 years ago. There was the same promise, and we know what happened 8 years later. 3 million undocumented immigrants were deported. Families were separated. And so right now we're talking about that, you know, we are looking at, regardless who's the president, I know the platform is different. Hillary Clinton is talking about, a bill on legalization in the first 100 days of her administration. We know what Donald Trump is saying, that he wants to build a wall and do massive deportations. But, you know, what we know is what we have had in 8 years.
What can you tell us about your Get Out the Vote efforts?
Yeah, and, you know, this is going to be, tomorrow is the 27th, but in the 28th, we are having the official launch of Millennio.org, or Millennium, but it's called Millennio.org. And what we are doing is Latinos, we will launch a 501c4 organization that we build an independent and a progressive voice among Latinos and Multnomah County, but also in the state of Oregon, to influence political system, promote the collective actions to transform public policies, such as the issue of immigration reform and mass incarceration and police brutality, but also is about civic engagement. And I think that one of the main parts of these actions is about the civic engagement part. So I think that we will encourage people to be there on Friday, October 28th at 6 p.m. That will be the official launch of Millennio.org, when it's an urgent invitation to folks to vote.
Francisco, could I ask you to repeat the dates and locations for your upcoming events?
Okay, well, on Thursday, October 27, at 7 p.m., we'll have a panel discussion on the intersections of immigrant rights movement and the Black Lives Matter movement, and the theme is called Voices for Racial Justice, Voices for Racial Justice. At 7 p.m., we'll be at St. Francis of Assisi Catholic Church, located at 1131 Southeast Oak Street, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Again, on Thursday, October 27, at St. Francis of Assisi Catholic Church at 7 p.m. That's the event this Thursday. Now, on Friday, we are launching a campaign of getting out to vote, and we also will launch the a 501c4 organization called millennial.org, millennial.org. And what is this? It's engaging Latino millennials to vote at these elections and to vote smart. And that will be Friday, October 28th at 6 p.m. and will be at the Ambridge Event Center located in 1333 Northeast Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard.
For KBOO, this is Ray Bodwell.
The world's biggest eye contact experiment is coming to Portland. Here with us in Studio 2 are Jana Holm and Maguire Hammond. Thanks for coming in tonight, Jana and Maguire.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks. Great to be here.
So let's not keep the listeners in suspense any longer. What is the world's biggest eye contact experiment?
Well, it's very exciting. It's a global event that takes place this Saturday in over 160 countries around the world. And people are just going to get together to share a minute of eye contact with strangers. And what the goal of the event is to demonstrate that beyond our differences, what's there? Mm-hmm. Love and
we're
humanity.
All the same.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And the event was created by the Liberators International. Who are they and what are they trying to do?
The Liberators International are from Perth, Australia, and their leader is Peter Sharp, and he created all these different experiments and just events to really bring people together and to find that human connection and to bring more peace to cities around the world. So they're a very great group. They do a lot of activities to really bring that human connection back.
So why don't you walk us through how exactly this works?
Well, it couldn't be more simple, honestly.
yeah.
People are invited to come to Pioneer Square on Saturday between 11 and 2. And there will be, we have about 270 people, volunteers mm-hmm. that have said they're coming.
Right.
And so come and sit down or stand and share a moment's eye contact with someone that you don't know. And it's an experiment. So see what that feels like. Put your phone down and make eye contact with someone and experiment with that and mm-hmm. see if what kind of connection is there.
Mm-hmm. And we want your feedback. We're going to have people doing like a documentation of the after effects. So once you've done your experiment with, you know, however many strangers you want, come and tell us what your experience was. And it doesn't matter if it's good or bad. We want your honest opinion. And just, you know, really, really tune in to how that feels for you.
So how many years has each of you been participating in the event, and how did you get involved?
This is both of our first year.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is the second annual mm-hmm. global event, and I saw the video from the first one, and I just was like, I have to bring this to Portland. This is amazing. And so I got in touch with Liberators International and got on their social media site and waited, and... And then it came around again, and I said I wanted to host.
Mm-hmm. And that's how me and Jana met.
Yeah, and I was like, I want to find a co-host. Mm-hmm. And then Maguire popped in.
Yeah.
And we just hit the ground running together.
Yep.
And before we went on air, Jana, you mentioned that you guys had been practicing. Can mm-hmm. you tell the listeners a little bit about how that felt?
Well, we got together, mostly we've been able to do everything electronically, but we got together to do some planning with our volunteers and just stopped and said, let's practice together. Mm-hmm. And wow, it just settles. For me personally, I feel really settled and calm and mm-hmm. connected and...
It's very spiritual. It's a form of meditation. When you look into someone's eyes, everything just kind of stops, and you kind of just realize that this is a person in front of you, and you're so similar, and you just feel so much love coming from them, and you really feel that connection.
I know. You know, what happens for me is my mind just kind of gets paralyzed because mm-hmm. I can't I just stop thinking and I drop into my heart. Mm-hmm. And the great thing is just realizing, you know, there's just, we know about our differences and our minds just are constantly cranking away at, you know, how we're different and what's wrong. And when you connect with your heart, you just realize what can, you know, rather than what divides us, what actually connects us. And you just feel it. So it's a felt experience. Mm-hmm. It's a felt experiment.
So I've got to ask, did you schedule, or is this experiment scheduled for right before Election Day on purpose, or is that just a happy coincidence?
Just a coincidence. You know, it's from Australia, so they weren't really, you know, aware that it was going to happen right before Election Day. But it's a really great coincidence. You know, we probably feel a lot more divided and more anger than ever right now with the election going on. So it's a really great way to bring everyone together and, you know, realize we all want the same thing. And even though we have different opinions on what's right, really we all just want what's best for all of, you know, the whole country.
Anything else to add about why this particular idea resonates for you two right now?
Well, I think, you know, people are addicted to their devices. They know they are. Mm-hmm. And it's like, how do I stop this? And I think this is, you know, a way to remind us, oh yeah, I can put my device down and just simply look at someone else on the bus, the grocery clerk, my child, my partner, and just feel how good that feels and how, you know, disconnected we feel when we spend too much time with our heads in electronics.
Mm-hmm. Is there a downside of asking people to sit and stare at each other?
No, I don't think so. It could be uncomfortable for some people. There could, you know, you could have some anxiety come up. But from my experience and from talking to other people who have done this before, the more you do it, you know, the more comfortable you get, and layers of anxiety and, you know, feeling judged or, you know, not comfortable in your own skin, those layers will come out and, you know, disappear the longer you really sit and stare at someone.
And is there anything else you'd say to somebody who perhaps is a little shy or introverted and might be nervous? What would you say to put them at ease about participating in this kind of event?
I think, you know, take a deep breath, mm-hmm. realize that you're going to feel a little anxious, and enter it with curiosity. You know, mm-hmm. like, what do you have to lose? And that, yeah, you are going to feel a little bit uncomfortable, but what also is there when you connect with someone like that? And maybe, yeah, take a deep breath and feel your heart. Maybe put your hand on your heart for a moment just to sort of drop in to the felt experience of this. And McGuire, you made a great comment earlier about, before we were talking, about focusing on one eye, you know, so that can help you not jump back and forth, but just to settle with one eye when you're looking at the other person.
Yeah.
A bit of guidance.
I couldn't agree more, yeah. Yeah, you really need to zone in on one eye. Don't try not to blink too much or let your eyes wander. Don't worry about the sounds around you. Just really zone in on the eye and just see.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, what do you hope this event is going to accomplish for Portland? It's a somewhat friendly city already, right?
Right. Oh, yeah. I think that's why we already have so many participants, because people here are really interested in these type of things, which is great. But I think we could really accomplish just some more humanity, just more connection, especially with, you know, we're a very diverse city. There's lots of different type of people here, which is beautiful, and we all get along very well. But if we can bring even more connection and make everyone feel more comfortable in their own skin, I think that would be wonderful.
I would say that, so one of the sayings with this event is that connection is the pathway to peace, and that this is a, you know, this is a peace movement, and that I hope people, they feel that, and they realize that individually they have the power to make a difference in the world simply by making eye contact with people. And there's going to be a ripple effect. This is happening all over the globe, and it's just, you know, it's this huge spread of kindness. And, you know, that's real change.
All right. Why don't we remind our listeners how they can be involved?
Just show up at the Pioneer Square this Saturday. Anytime between 11 to 2, you can bring chairs, cushion, blankets, or just simply yourself. But yeah, show up anytime between then. We'll be there. You can sit back and just kind of watch the experiment. You don't have to take part right away, but you know, definitely come in and join us.
Great. Thank you, Jana and McGuire. We've been talking with Jana Holm and McGuire Hammond of the World's Biggest Eye Contact Experiment, coming to Pioneer Courthouse Square this Saturday from 11 to 3 or 11 to 2?
11 to 2. 2.
11 to 2. You can find out more online at www.theliberators.com.au or on Facebook at the World's Biggest Eye Contact Experiment, Portland, Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you.
The imploding Affordable Care Act has prompted a wave of price hikes across the industry. Many experts and consumers say it's a ripoff. Single-payer health insurance advocates protested this afternoon outside the offices of the Moda Healthcare Company. KBOO's Lisa Loving spoke with organizer Lisa Stiller about the issue and what people can do about it.
So we're going to be going down to 601 Southwest 2nd Avenue, which is outside of Moda's corporate office. And we're going to be protesting and making some statements about the announced average 25% premium hike for people getting their insurance through the exchange. The other issue is that the amount of offerings on the exchange has been dwindling. Four have been, you know, opted out this year in Oregon. Many counties have as few as two or three choices. Competition is dwindling, and the competition was supposed to keep the prices down. We feel very strongly that, yes, the ACA has helped millions of people. It has really not solved the real systemic problem of healthcare in this country, which is you cannot have healthcare given or system run by for-profit insurance companies and really have the people's interests at heart.
Lisa, are you part of an organization or an organized effort to promote the concept of single-payer healthcare in the United States?
There is a group in Oregon, Healthcare for All Oregon, which is pushing towards Medicare for All or single-payer health care. So, yes, a part of that group. And people who are part of that group, other people concerned about health insurance and the cost of insurance will be there with us. But, yes, we are pushing for a single-payer system in Oregon and hopefully in the whole country.
Now, Healthcare for All has been working for years towards this goal, and we've watched them from a distance because so many healthcare consumers cannot understand what the idea of single payer even is.
So the idea is that instead of private health insurance companies managing your healthcare, think of Medicare, how it's managed by a single entity, the government. Their overhead is something like 3%, and your health insurance companies are now between 15 and 20% is what they can take for profit or overhead. After the ACA, it was much more before. But it's a much more efficient system. Everyone gets the care they need when they need it. And for us, healthcare is a human right. It's part of, like, you know, we think nothing of feeding the hungry. We think nothing of, you know, trying to make room for the homeless. You know, healthcare is a human right. And we believe that everyone deserves decent, affordable health care. Every industrialized country, or almost every industrialized country, has some kind of single-payer system, but us. We are so married to that for-profit insurance company system that people just don't understand that breaking free of it will save everybody money in the long run. The premiums, the co-pays, the deductibles, when you add those up, those cost so much more than what a single-payer system will cost us in taxes.
All right. How do people participate with you? Lisa, what are you asking people to do?
Asking for addressing the rate hike, asking for a healthcare system that cares for all, single-payer, and basically asking the insurance companies to really be accountable. They don't really need this price hike. They are making so much money. They are profiting off of sick people, and they are saying they're hiking it because they had more sick people in the system than they thought, so their earnings are less. If you look at the earnings of the CEOs, if you look at the profits of these health insurance companies, it's absolutely outrageous. Write a letter to your senator or congressperson and ask for some reform. I know that there's a lot of pressure now to get our next president to really look at the ACA and see what they could do to alleviate some of this. What we really need to, is to move forward towards a single-payer system.
For KBOO News, I'm Lisa Loving.
Health insurers are complaining about how Obamacare is costing them money, but the reality is that they are thriving under the Affordable Care Act. The top five corporate insurance giants have made $65 billion in profits since passage of the Affordable Care Act and have continued reporting outsized profits since the act was fully implemented in 2014. KBOO's Lisa Loving spoke with Public Citizen Research Director Rick Claypool about the Watchdog Organization's new analysis about the health of the health insurance industry.
Well, you know, we've been hearing a lot about the increase of marketplace costs for with the Affordable Care Act, and the companies, in particular Aetna, Anthem, Humana, and United Health, complaining about these multi-million-dollar losses and using that as a reason to stage pretty significant withdrawals from the Affordable Care Act marketplace. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, these companies are raking in billions in profit and not slowing down one bit, as far as anyone can tell, in terms of the actual profits they're reporting after the Affordable Care Act was signed into law and after the bill was implemented. Since it's been implemented, the top five health insurance companies have made more than $65 billion in profits. So I think whenever we see these reports of these crocodile tears they're shedding about, oh, they have to withdraw from the marketplace because of these losses, that bigger context needs to be understood.
What do you see happening with these companies like Aetna that, as you say, are complaining about their losses, but really they're making billions of dollars? What is their end game? What are they doing there?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, they want to have their cake and eat it too, right? I mean, there's been some speculation that some of this is fueled as kind of retribution for the blocked mergers. The Justice Department, you know, within the past couple of months, blocked. There were proposed mergers both between Anthem and Cigna and Aetna and Humana, so that those big top five health insurance companies would have become even bigger three health insurance companies. They're talking about losing millions is what they've been complaining about, but they're at the same time they're profiting in billions, right? And this is, and I'm not talking about earnings, so to make sure that's clear, I mean this is the profit that that these companies are making. I mean, these are members of AHIP, the American Health Insurance Plans lobby, which simultaneously was working with the administration and Congress to shape the shape of the Affordable Care Act, while at the same time funneling $100 million to the Chamber of Commerce, which was advocating for defeating the Affordable Care Act. So this kind of duplicity really shouldn't be surprising to anyone. But the takeaway here is that the administration and Congress, 5 years ago, really, they did this industry a favor by keeping single payer off the table whenever they're having those negotiations, while inviting the industry to the table. Now this is how they repay this this favor. So whenever the Affordable Care Act needs to be fixed, or health care reform needs to be strengthened, we hope that the next administration, the next Congress, whoever is orchestrating that repair job, which is much needed, takes that lesson to heart and really pushes hard for a single-payer, universal, Medicare-for-all style healthcare system that takes away the profit-driven incentives of the insurance industry to just kind of continues to squeeze patients and programs like this, while reducing the quality of care.
For KBOO News, I'm Lisa Loving.
Yeah.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for The Underground at 6. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather is rainy, with highs around 61 degrees. Today in history, in 1881, local sheriff Wyatt Earp and his brothers Morgan and Virgil took aim at the Clanton Gang in a little spot called the OK Corral in Tombstone, Arizona. The Earps and their friend Doc Holliday prevailed over the gangsters and were eventually convicted of murder, but the conviction was thrown out as, quote, justified. The quote of the day is from British author Stephen McGee, who said, "Corrupt and incompetent police officers have a long history of being protected by their colleagues, police, internal affairs, and the government." End quote, period.
The standoff between the Standing Rock Sioux and the Dakota Access Pipeline shows no sign of letting up. Indigenous opponents of the four-state, nearly $4 billion pipeline have set up another encampment. Members of the Great Sioux Nation say they are invoking eminent domain over land rightfully theirs under an 1851 treaty and have situated their winter camp directly in the path of the pipeline. Energy Transfer Partners, developers of the massive pipeline that would run beneath the Missouri River, say the land belongs to the company after they recently purchased the tract from a farmer. According to the Morton County Sheriff's Department, six states have deployed enforcement officers to the area. Tuesday night, in a Facebook post, the department said private security hired by Energy Transfer Partners, who unleashed attack dogs and pepper spray on protesters in early September, were not licensed and could face prosecution. Hundreds of people have been arrested during months of protest, most on minor trespass charges. Yet many have been subjected to strip searches and jailed. FSRN's Nell Abrams spoke with Cheyenne River Sioux Chairman Harold Frazier, who met with President Barack Obama Tuesday to discuss the pipeline project and the militarized police response to the protests.
Chairman Frazier, thanks for joining us on FSRN. You spoke with President Obama and asked him to protect the rights of the Lakota people, their sacred sites, and the waters of the Missouri River. How did your conversation go?
I was a little hopeful, but I guess I kind of got what I expected. There's court cases proceeding. One of the things he assured me is that he is going to... Follow the consultation process, which three agencies put in place. And he's reviewing the statutories, all the laws. So that was good, because I think that's important that the laws that govern oil pipeline are followed. So I'm glad, I'm happy that he is assuring us that he will be reviewing them laws.
Monday, the chairman of the Standing Rock Sioux, Dave Archambault, sent a letter to U.S. Attorney General Loretta Lynch asking the Justice Department to investigate the use of force and militarization of the police response against Native American pipeline opponents and their supporters. Did this issue come up with the president, and what are your thoughts about the tactics used to suppress the protests?
Yeah, that's one of the points that I brought up to him is the... civil rights violations and the brutality of the police. And he assured me there are federal monitors on site. And I think that's really important. You know, I was out to the camp this weekend, and on Saturday, they were arresting the protectors as they were complying with the order of disperse. And as they were walking from the site back to the camp is when the police went and arrested them. And to me, why? You know, they were complying with their order of dispersing. And so it's really disappointing. And right now, that is my immediate concern, the safety of the people who are up at the camp.
You say the president mentioned there were federal monitors on the site?
Well, I don't know who the monitors are. I know, like Chairman Archambault, I've written a letter about 3 weeks ago, and I was called by the FBI that there was a representative from the Department of Justice that went to the site and to the camp, and they asked me to come up with names of our members to visit with them. And as a matter of fact, we have a tribal member who was bitten by one of them attack dogs back on Labor Day. And but I wasn't able to be there. Our people said that they were kind of disappointed a little bit because when they met with the DOJ representative, the FBI was there, and he was just asking for names of individuals versus, you know, listening to the stories. So because that's something that's really going on. The local media is really characterizing the protectors as violent people, thieves, and which is not true at all. I've been there in the evenings, you know, everybody's praying, singing, and, you know, and it's, you know, good atmosphere. So I do know the local media in North Dakota is really just blowing things way out of proportion.
Chairman Frazier, videos recorded during interactions between protesters and police reveal scenes reminiscent of the civil rights battles of the 1960s. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, I don't think the people in North Dakota's attitudes have changed for the last 100 years. It really shows that they're still there, the hatred's still there towards Indian people. I visited with the U.S. Attorney's Office here about 2-3 weeks ago, and I asked him point blank, I said, how can a non-Indian physically assault an Indian and get away with it? And I was referring to when the DAPL security, you know, I've seen videos where they threw people down, you know, and they turned the dogs loose. And his response was, well, it's on state land. So I said, oh, so does that mean if a non-Indian comes to an Indian on Indian land, the Indian could do it back? Oh, no. He said, you go to jail. So my conclusion that only in America where a non-Indian could physically assault an Indian person and get away with it. And that's really a shame on our country.
Members of the Standing Rock Sioux have now set up another camp, this one on land they say is rightfully theirs under the 1851 Laramie Treaty and directly in the path of the pipeline. What's the status?
Yes, they are still there. You know, I think with the recent treatment by the police officers, you know, escalated our, the people at the camp to take such a stance. I mean, they're getting tired of being physically assaulted, mistreated. And I think, you know, I say it like this, you know, our grandfathers didn't need a piece of paper to determine where they live. And I think that I admire their courage, their bravery. And, you know, that's just, you know, it is getting attention. So hopefully, you know, we could get more positive, you know, looking at more positive, you know, to show the commitment that they have in protecting clean water. Because we definitely need, you know, more people to wake up and see.
Finally, what else do you want our listeners to understand about the resistance to the Dakota Access Pipeline?
Well, you know, I think it's important for everyone to know that it's just not an Indian issue. It's an issue that involves all of us. It doesn't matter where you come from, the race, because at some point, you know, we're all drinking the same water, and that water is life, and you need to have it to be healthy and to live a long life. So I've been saying that it's a human issue, not just an Indian issue, and it's sad that back home locally, that's what it's being portrayed at. If you're an Indian, you're against oil, and if you're not, you're for oil. And that's really not the case. You know, I you know, want to just emphasize that it is a human issue.
That's Cheyenne River Sioux Chairman Harold Frazier. He joined us by phone just hours after meeting with President Obama. Nell Abram, FSRN.
In an interview published in the Washington Post on Monday, Senator Bernie Sanders discussed ways in which Hillary Clinton could be pushed more to the left if she is elected next month. With the popularity he gained during the primary season, Sanders sees it as his role to see that the Democratic Party implements the platform he helped to design. Citing the 22 states he won in the primaries, he stated he would be in vigorous opposition if Clinton attempted to steer the platform away from the more progressive elements. With allies in the Senate, such as Elizabeth Warren, Sanders vows to keep pushing for more social democratic values, such as a $15 an hour minimum wage and free public college tuition.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael is already going into withdrawal from his election addiction.
Once the election is over, will our eyes be pulled from our heads by the new media vacuum? Facebook will be like an abandoned shopping mall without pictures of people's ballots and the sharp reprimands and threats against anyone who won't vote for the right candidate. Will we look up from our phones and computer screens to wonder who the person next to us is? Without Trump, who will be the next cattle prod of fear exhorting us to appreciate the overcrowded high-rent pasture we're fenced into? How many days until we're told who has the best chance to be president in 2020, which will not be a year of clear, progressive, or intelligent visions? I don't want to stop voting. At the restaurant, I draw little boxes by every item and blacken in my choices. I want the vote to not stop on red. I want to vote myself a big raise. The world is my polling place. The only speech I need is my debit card. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael. Vote, then go have some fun.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Ray Bodwell, Dan Raphael, and Lisa Loving. Special thanks to Free Speech Radio News. Our engineer is David Kesters. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Sam Bowman.
And I'm Erin J. Bernard. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO. At 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, Joanne Hardesty hosts Voices from the Edge Talk Radio. At 9, it's Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know with Teresa Mitchell. At 10, hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15.